welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome ass.
Yo, yo,
ah, now,
fucker.
Tune in to Al Joe, the funk master. Watch your grill, you'll get knocked out cold faster. Talking shit, now we talking facts. With the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet, fuck a name and a fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfuckers.
I love doing that. I'm in a great freaking mood, as you guys can see. Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps. Huge weekend. Lots of great fights. And of course, for the team, Long Island, Chris Weidman, Long Island's very own, the All-American, is back. And I know there's been a lot of criticism about the fight and whatnot, but just to get the monkey off your back, I think that's a huge thing to do. A lot of people were counting him out, and even people close to him back home, like people that he knows as friends and whatnot. So for him to come out there, do what he do, especially gutted out that third round the way he did in that fashion, very dominant over the 11th rank, Omari Akhmedov, who wasn't, he hasn't lost a fight in six fights. And he was on a three-fight winning streak outside of the draw. And then you have the other fights that he won. So I think he deserves some respect for what he did, former champion. And I think, like people said, it wasn't the prettiest performance, and like Chris said as well, but he went out there, got it done against a very, very tough dude when his back was against the wall and everyone was counting him out. And I saw a couple of guys tweeting on Twitter that they lost a lot of money on Chris because they thought he was going to lose, and that's what you get. That's what you get. Don't you ever bet against the Chris, the one and only. We'll just get into the main card first. We'll talk Derek Lewis, Olenek. I thought that was a great fight. Olenek came out with the grappling heavy style that we expected. He had the scarf hold. He hit two sweeps that I love when you're in the half guard position. You get that underhook. You throw your opponent over the top. You elevate, you scrape the ankle, and you take the single leg and allows you to either roll through sweep or you come up with the single and finish the takedown. And that's what he was able to do twice and reverse the position against Derek Lewis, who was heavy on top, landing some bombs. The ref had to tell him to watch the back of the head because he was throwing those lunch boxes and just swinging it with reckless abandon. And it was a good fight. I thought Lewis was probably going to get him out there in the first round, but eventually Olenek was able to find the reversal and take Derek Lewis down with the sweep. That scarf hold looked tight. I was a little concerned that he was probably going to get the submission over him with that, and that would have sucked to see Derek Lewis, his big body, getting tapped out with a scarf hold in judo position. That's a miserable position. I've been in there many, many times with Marab, and my neck does not feel the same for the next week, maybe the next 2 weeks. So for Olenek to put him in those tough positions, and for Derek Lewis to get out and then come out in that third round, that second round, and come out with like it was kind of like a flying knee, but like a half flying knee, then landed a bomb of a right hand, dropped Olenek, and did not let up. Herb Dean saw enough and stopped the fight. I was glad Herb, because he was on the backside, so he couldn't really see Olenek's face. So good thing he saw that he was starting to go limp and just jumped in and stopped the fight. You don't need to see a guy take any more damage than that, especially being at 43 years old and Oleksiy Olenek. Great fight for the main event. Derek Lewis now looking to possibly take on Curtis Blaydes. I saw these guys chatting at each other a bit, and I love it. I love when there's some backstory. It gives us more to clamor to for the fight. It kind of builds up that anticipation. And I know Lewis was saying some stuff, saying he doesn't mind if he goes out there to take him down, and he wouldn't mind trying to actually take him down and land some ground and pound against Curtis Blaydes, the wrestler. So that's going to be a fun matchup. I think both guys want the fight, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with that. Siri, I did not ask you anything. Who else we got? Chris. Now, we'll break down the Chris Weidman fight. For me, the game plan was simple. We go out there and we use the All-American wrestling that we know we have in our back pocket, mixed in with our BJJ black belt, and not just a black belt, a Sarah BJJ black belt. You guys heard the theme before. You guys know the MO. So he goes out there, gets it done. I think the output mixed in with the quarantine, the anxiety of the pressure of everything, I think that kind of fatigued him a little bit more than usual. But other than that, I mean, you couldn't ask for a more dominant performance in terms of the wrestling aspect and the jiu-jitsu. He controlled him for just about 4 minutes and 30 seconds of the very third round. Now, the first round, he got the takedown. It was a little bit back and forth. He was able to get back to his feet a couple times in Omari Akhmedov. Tough dude, strong dude. You guys see how he's built. He's put together like a chiseled statue, kind of like Yoel Romero. And for Chris to take him down multiple times and just keep the constant pressure. Now, the things that were scaring me a little bit was the exchanges to the body. When Chris, in the second round, was going for the takedown, Omari would stuff it, and then he was throwing strikes on Chris whenever he would take Chris down, and Chris would get back up, and he was just trying to throw those haymakers. That's pretty much his game plan. He comes out there, he throws a 3-2, or he throws a 2-3, sometimes an overhand. Occasionally, he jabs, and sometimes he throws leg kicks, and if you throw a kick at him, he does a great job of catching it and landing a straight right cross, which he tried to do against Chris, and I think it clipped him or grazed him or might have missed. I think Chris rolled with it. But either way, those were the main things that were my concerns with this matchup. We knew we just couldn't stand in front. You have a 5-inch reach advantage on this guy. This guy shouldn't even get close. There was times where Chris was pawing out and measuring, and Omari was in a stance, and it just looked like if he were to throw a punch, Chris could have slipped it and just ripped and countered. Because if you trap the lead hand, and this is when Chris was going southpaw sometimes, southpaw against the orthodox fighter. So he's trapping the lead hand with his right and Omari's left hand. So if Omari goes to try to throw a hook or a cross with his right, now he misses, Chris slips, he's got the wide opening advantage to clip him. It kind of reminds me of the Conor McGregor. Whenever he's fighting those opposite stances, he taps, he controls. When guys overextend, he hits a nice step back and hits that pull counter cross and normally drops guys or clips them and puts them on a wobbly leg. So I think when we go back and break down the tape, we're going to see a lot of things that we could have done better. And again, man, with the quarantine, not everyone having all the right training partners that they want. You got to do what you can. Chris is older now. He's 36. He's had a ton of injuries, a couple of neck surgeries at this point. So people are trying to compare him from the Chris Weidman of 6 years ago. That's a different person. And that's just being the honest truth. We get older, we slow down, and that's just what happens to us. Father time is undefeated, and we got to just try to make sure we can show up to the cage, show up to the octagon, and do our best with what we are able to put together in our training camp. And sometimes health is wealth, you know. So when you go out there and you just feel good, that's better than going through a crazy grinding training camp when all you did was get bumped and bruises left and right. And it, just to get to the fight, you're aching and pain just to even make that walk. So I think a lot of people have to understand where the game plan was coming from and the performance. And at the end of the day, for me, man, to take out the guy who's ranked 11th, that's a huge win. And I think it puts him right back in the mix. Now, I don't know where he's going to want to go from here in terms of if he wants to look for another upper echelon fight with the guys in the top five again, big name. The UFC is notorious for doing that. Or if he wants to take another fight with a guy who's ranked like right outside the top five or in that top 15, you know, get a payday, a competitive opponent, and get a little bit more of that swagger back, and we'll see where he's at. But it all comes down to ultimately what Weidman wants to do. So whatever he wants, we're going to be supportive of it. And I think he's got a lot more fight left in him and a couple more good performances left. So we're going to see where he goes from here, and I'm super excited about his future, especially for him. Like I said, man, for him to come back and get that win over a very tough dude, I think that speaks volumes. Man, people on Instagram and Twitter, you guys are brutal. Shame on you guys. You guys are brutal. That's why I'm like, man, they love you when you're winning, and they hate you when you're losing, and they kick you down, you know? So even just looking back, you know, he beat Vitor Belfort, lost to Rockhold, Romero, Gegard Mousasi, came back, beat Gastelum, who was in the prime of his career and on top still, and ended up losing to Salza, Jacare, and Dominic Reyes, and came back and beat Omari. So I think for this, man, I think it's a huge pressure and a huge relief for him. So I'm just excited to see him in the win column and to see him in good spirits and knowing that he still got it. And his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu is the best in the world. If I were him personally, I'm getting in shape just to out-grapple anybody for 15 to 25 minutes because he's that good on the ground. And that's all he needs to do to win these fights. Next up, we have Darren Stewart versus Maki Pitolo. That was a great fight. I thought Maki was looking good. I thought Darren Stewart was doing some good stuff with the combinations, but he looked a little bit slower than Maki. The body work that Maki Pitolo is known for, he didn't really get to implement that game plan. Darren Stewart kind of shut that down. Now, Maki pushed him against the cage, and I think with the speed disadvantage that Darren Stewart had, I felt that every time Maki stepped in, Darren would lower his head and almost just not really see where he was throwing his strikes, and Maki was able to get off and get out of there. Now, he did land a couple of good solid strikes against Pitolo, but ultimately, Pitolo pushed him against the cage. He went for a takedown, which I don't really know him for doing. He's predominantly a striker from what I know. He takes him down. Darren Stewart latches on a ninja choke pretty much, and he hits the high elbow guillotine, and he pushes the fist all the way into the neck, into the carotid, and pretty much almost put Maki to sleep. So he was tapping pretty quickly with that one. That is a good win for Stewart, I think. Maki Pitolo, man, he's got a lot of hype behind him, I think, especially because his body work, his striking is so good. And for Stewart, who's coming off of a loss, unanimous decision over Fabrinsky or whoever the hell that is, he was in the UFC, got cut, fought the Cage Warriors. Now, he got cut after he fought Deron Wynn, which makes no sense to me. He was on a two-fight win streak. They cut him, and he lost to Fabrinsky at Cage Warriors decision and came back for a UFC reappearance, and he got a finish win over a very tough and game opponent in Maki Pitolo. The next fight, this was the only one that kind of not bothered me, but wasn't the most entertaining. It was just kind of like, eh. I didn't expect this type of game plan with Yana Kutsiskaya versus Storlyarenko. I don't even know how to say this woman's name, but she is very, very good on the ground. She had about four or five armbar finishes in a row in like the first round. This girl, Julia or whatever, Julija. One, two, three armbar finishes, three of them in the first round, four, five armbar finishes in the first round. And in some jiu-jitsu competitions, she had some armbar finishes as well. So tough grappler. She was pulling guard. Every time Yana pushed her against the cage, she was trying to climb the cage. She was figure four in her leg in a weird way that I've never seen, adamant on trying to get the fight to the ground. And Kutsiskaya just was content to keep her clinched against the cage, throwing some short knees and a couple of elbows here and there. But for the most part, it was kind of just being pushed against the cage, and I wasn't really too fond of that style. And I know I used to implement that game plan a lot, but the goal would be to finish the fight. You know, I'm not saying she wasn't trying to finish the fight, but I think you have to kind of show signs that you're trying to do it, you know, either with the ground and pound, vicious ground and pound, or active grappling against the cage, or more knees to the body or elbows, that type of thing. And I think it's a good growing fight for her. I think this one was, I think she was coming off of a loss as well. Yeah, she was coming off a loss to Aspen Ladd. So for her to just get back into the win column after being finished in the third round, I think this was more of like getting the monkey off your back and just getting a W. So good job for her. And we'll see what's next for her. Because I think she has good striking. At the end of that fight, she was throwing some side kicks and stuff like that. And I thought she had some really cool stuff that she could throw, but she wasn't really opening up. Every time she had the opportunity to jam her up and press her against the cage, she took every opportunity. And I'm just calling her JS. Her best chance of getting the fight to the ground was to just pull guard. So I think she has to work on a couple of takedown offense or even some sweeps from the ground to really get her jiu-jitsu going. She almost had one close armbar, very, very close, and somehow Yana was able to get out. Now, Beneil Dariush versus Scott Holtzman. This was a fun fight. First round, Beneil Dariush on a five-fight win streak, killing the game right now at lightweight. Finish over Scott Holtzman, spinning back fist, overhand left over Jakar Klaus. Frank Camacho choked him out in the first round. Drew Dober, armbar finish in the second round, unanimous decision over Thiago Moises. He lost to Alexander Hernandez by punches. He had a draw to Evan Dunham, and he lost to Edson Barbosa by that flying knee that was vicious. He stepped in with a jab, and then he tried a level change right after that. Barbosa just stepped back and timed it, caught him with a flush knee, and put him out. And ever since then, he lost to Alexander Hernandez, he just like just flipped a switch in his head or something, kind of like that Drake song, I Just Flipped the Switch. I'm not going to change any of my clothes into my girlfriend's outfit, so I'm not doing that. But he gets the finish, man. Four finishes in a row. Armbar, rear naked choke, overhand left, spinning back fist. Scott Holtzman was doing good, even though I don't think Holtzman is like particularly great in one particular area, but he is a tough dude. He comes to win, and he bangs, man. He puts on. He's not like the greatest BJJ guy. He's not like the greatest wrestling. He's an all around well-rounded fighter, and I think he's a game opponent. He was coming off of two wins over Jim Miller and Dung Hung Ma, Dr. Stoppage in round two, and ran into a tough guy who just seems to have a career resurgence and in a stacked lightweight division, and for him to get the finishes the way he's doing it in style, not just like grinding out some wins. He's out there putting these guys away, and I think next for Benil has got to be a top 10 opponent for him, giving him an opportunity to reassert himself in the upper echelon of that division. And man, that division, man, it's a shark tank. 155 is probably one of the toughest divisions right now, outside of bantamweights, but I'm a little biased. No, but even outside the top 15, man, they got guys who could be interchangeably coming in and out of that top 15 because they are that deep. I think with the, because of the average human body size with 155 and 170, I think they should be doing top 20 as opposed to top 15 because they just have a lot more depth to work with. So I think that would give us a clearer vision of who's on the cusp of really pushing through that next level of competition. I mean, you got guys like Sharyukin, you got Benil Dariush, you got Aya Quinta, you got Jim Miller, who's still right there. You got Holtzman, who's on a 2-fight win streak. You got a lot of good guys. Khabib, Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson. That list just goes on. Dan Hooker, Dustin Poirier, and who's the other one? Paul Felder. There's a lot of good guys. Kevin Lee. That is a deep, deep division. Guys who fought for the belt or were one fight away from title contention. So it is a fun division to be a part of. And if you're in that top 10 and you're in there for a couple of years, top five, you know you are one of the best guys in the world for a reason. And you've taken out a killer's row of competition. And even Islam Makhachev. How do I forget that guy? Next fight, Tim Means. He had a great fight with Sharapoli. He gutted that one out. Decision. I forget the scorecards on that one, but that was a fun fight. Kevin Holland, Joaquin Buckley. This fight was fun for me. Holland talking shit the entire time during the fight was hysterical. I had to go back and rewind just to hear some of the stuff that he was saying. I thought it was just funny as hell. Just telling him, I'm like, he's telling the guy he's going to fuck him up. And then after that, he's telling him, but you a good ass dude though. And I'm like, damn. And he's like, I thought you wanted to talk. Telling his opponent, yeah, I thought you wanted to talk in the cage. Like pretty much you said all that other stuff. Now we're here now. Let's talk about it. And I thought that was just hilarious, man. He's just a fun guy to have in the octagon. I think he's won 4 out of his last 5, if I'm not mistaken. No, wrong. He made his debut over Thiago Santos after winning on Dana White's Contender Series, beat John Phillips, beat Mershot, beat Alessio DeCherico. So he won those three. Lost to Brendan Allen and then came back and beat Anthony Hernandez. And he just beat Joaquin Buckley by finish. That right cross, he pinned that thing so beautifully in that third round. 32 seconds in, the first one dropped him in the first round. It came back. Joaquin was throwing haymakers, but the height deficit, that was unreal because you see this guy who's built like Yoel Romero, but a lot shorter at 185. And he had a couple of knockout finishes and the guy was just winging hooks left and right, left hook, rock, right hook. And you see Holland just turning, covering, one hand down, shoulder rolling like he's in a boxing match. And that was probably the most impressive thing because he was so defensively sound. There was one time I was nervous when he threw a spinning back fist and he missed and he had his hands down and Joaquin stepped in. He threw a haymaker and it just grazed the top of his head. I was like, dude, he could have got knocked the fuck out right there. That was so, so bad. Really, really close. And came back. Well, he didn't really come back. He just picked up where he left off and just kept piecing him up. And eventually that 1-2. So from the Southpaw Orthodox stance, now Holland is the orthodox fighter. He throws a jab, and Joaquin, he ends up trying to slip. He slips to his right. So as he slips to his right, Holland doesn't even commit to the, he doesn't commit to the jab. He throws like a faint jab. As he gets him to bite on the jab, he comes back with a picture-perfect right cross that has his head turned and catches him on the side of the chin, knocks his mouthpiece out, and that was pretty much all she wrote, man. Holland's looking good right now. I think he's a true contender. Young guy, forced to be reckoned with, I think. Barely cuts any weight for the weight class. Super light. I think he walks around like 190. Doesn't want to cut down to 170. I get it. He's got the range. He's got the athletic ability. He's raw. And he doesn't fight with any type of particular style. He was doing karate chops and shit like that in there. I was like, dude, this guy is hilarious. He's a fun, like I said, he's a fun fighter to watch. And I'm excited to see what's next for him. I think he's going to be a true contender in this weight class. As long as he keeps improving, he's hard to hit. His grappling is funky. He doesn't do like the traditional orthodox things. And I think his length helps him to get away with a lot of stuff. And I think he's going to be a hard puzzle to figure out because you don't really know. I don't think he really knows what he's going to do. He's just kind of freestyling in there. The front kicks, taking his time, but he's calm and he's reading everything. And I think that's what is my indicator for a good fighter who can read the situation, assess it, pick your shots, and just kind of just have fun while you're out there. Other good fights. There was a lot of good fights on this. Andrew Sanchez looked great against Thurman. He's predominantly a wrestler. I think he was an NAIA two-time champion or something like that, the commentators were saying. I know he was a wrestler, but he goes out there, shows amazing boxing, and eventually gets the finish with the cross. And I was shocked. I didn't think that fight was going to go that way. He lost to Marvin Vettori before this by decision. And he comes back and knocks out Wellington Thurman, which, I don't know, I just didn't see that fight going the way he did. I thought it was going to be more of a grinding match, but he showed huge improvements in his striking and that karate style. He was bouncing in and out, darting in with the 1-2, and I think he's training up there with Firas Sahabi and those guys now. I think that's who I saw in his corner, so I'm excited to see what's going to happen for his near future just because if he's with Firas, I think some good things are going to happen. I do remember him coming down to the gym to train with Weidman a while back. I don't know what ever happened with that. I don't know if he was with Mark Henry and he came down to do some cross training, but I haven't seen him since then. Dun, dun, dun. Next fight, Gavin Tucker versus Justin James. That fight was fun as fuck. Gavin Tucker was a guy that I was looking forward to when he made his UFC debut back in, when was it? Against Sam Cecilia, 2017 in February. He is a fun fighter. If you watch this fight, he only lost to Rick Glenn, and then he got hurt sometime after 2000. So he fought 2017 twice, didn't fight again until 2019, and took some time off again. I guess he kept getting injured, they said. But he was coming off a win. Came back for Justin James in a barn burner fight. But his striking looks so crisp. His Muay Thai, his feints. Now, if you watch the way he moves, there's only a few guys I've ever said this about. They have this ability to have, like, their quick twitch muscles, the way they feint, the way they read their opponents, the way they move around in the octagon with either his wrestling, jiu-jitsu, just like freak athletes. Gavin Tucker, to me, seems to be that guy at featherweight. I think he has a real slick way of maneuvering around the cage. If you watch some of the stuff he was doing where he was throwing the kicks. I hope I didn't bounce out. Fuck. Something I hear about this fucking GoPro starts recording sometimes. Yes, it did. Good catch. If you watch the way Gavin Tucker was throwing those kicks, he would feint the knee, show a quick twitch, and then he'll throw the head kick from the southpaw position, strong grappler, and he'll step in, feint with the right, and he'll step in with the left knee, and as soon as he get in close, he was feinting, level changing, rolling, and then coming back with a big right hook, big left knee, or a big left head kick, and I just think his striking just looked phenomenal. Justin James almost put him out with the uppercut. He throws a big right hand, big cross, comes underneath it with a two, that would be a five. Yeah, so a 2-5, pops him under the middle, underneath his shell defense, drops him. I thought the fight was over. He pushes the Price, almost chokes him out with the guillotine. Gavin almost loses his shorts. His whole ass is out for the most part in his spandex, not his butt cheeks, like literally. But his whole butt is out. His shorts are pretty much handcuffing him, so he can't really move. Somehow he gets out of the guillotine and he ends up on top and almost finishes the fight with the rear naked choke. I'm just like, dude, that is insane for him to go from that to that. It's pretty impressive. But watch the way he's moving and watch the way he's throwing those combinations. He's just smooth, very efficient with his striking, his energy. And like I said, he was a guy I was excited about when he made his debut the very, very first time. I didn't know who he was, but when I watched him, I was like, this kid is fucking good. Like, throwing some hammers out there. That left head kick, then he started going to the body. And what I thought was even more beautiful was that push kick. I know Paul Felder kept calling it a teep. But I didn't really call it. That's not really a teep when it's the rear leg. That's more of a push kick. I guess it was more so the way he was throwing it. It was very traditional Muay Thai. And you hear the coaches in the corner, way, way. Fun fighter, man. Perfect performance. I thought it was great. Very dominant. Outside of him getting dropped and almost finished, he came back, weathered the storm, some adversity on his way back. And I think for him to go out there and get the finish in the third round, really putting the paces on Justin James. And he beat him up pretty good within that second and third round. And from there, you can see him starting to wilt a little bit. And eventually, James shot. He takes him down by stuffing the shot, spins around, and throws the hooks in and finishes the fight. Yusuf Zalao, the Moroccan devil. This kid is fun to watch. Takes on Peter Barrett. Beat him up pretty good. Very one-sided performance. I think this is his third fight in the UFC in like 6 weeks. Yep, he fought June 27th. Now he just fought. And his last fight was February over Austin Lingo. Three-fight win streak in the UFC. The sky's the limit for this kid. He's not the biggest guy, not the biggest power puncher, but he's finessed. And I think he's very creative in there. Spinning back kick to the face, almost finished the fight. Displaying some high IQ with the grappling. Almost finished the rear naked choke, but a couple things he missed a little bit with putting the fist, the palm behind the head and really compressing the chest of your opponent and opening his chest to extend your hips into your opponent and the head. So you're pushing the head with your chest and that's pressing it into your forearms as you squeeze forward and you pull back to get that extra compression. That was a good fight, man. Fun fight for him. And I was really excited about that one. I wasn't sure that kid, Peter Barrett, was going to survive that first round, but he was able to do it, man. It's pretty crazy how training with guys like this, and you go out there and you see how well they do and how much fun they're having in the octagon, and they're just going out there and flowing. Real quick, before I forget, if you are enjoying this video, of course, destroy the like button. Ding, 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 ding. And this podcast is brought to you guys by DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code FUNKMASTER to get a free shot at $1 million in total prizes for this weekend's UFC 252's contest. That's promo code FUNKMASTER to get a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. The minimum $5 deposit is required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details. So if you put in a deposit of $5 or use my promo code, you will get one free entry at any one of the contests. Go check out DraftKings.com and go make your lineup. If you don't know what DraftKings is, it's a daily fantasy draft. So you go out there, you make your picks, you make your team, and if you win, you win big. Let's go. Now, we got another card coming up, UFC 252. Super excited about this fight. Now, of course, there's a lot of good things going on. We got the trilogy rematch with Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier. Now, DC wins the first one. Stipe comes back in rare form and wins the second one after a much more contested battle. And now we're going to settle this again and see who is the real kingpin of the heavyweight division. And I'm excited about this one. I don't know which way I'm going to go for multiple reasons. I don't know what DC's game plan is going to be. Is he going to address the mummy defense that he does where he steps in, looks for the underhook, and goes for the dirty boxing with the right hand? Because when he does that, if Stipe faints him and DC bites too much, that leaves him open for those body shots. Maybe Stipe even decides to throw a kick there instead. But he leaves the risk of getting that kick caught. So it really depends on what approach both of these guys are using and what did they learn from each other in their first matchup. I'm excited about this one. I'm not sure which way I'm leaning. Now, for this matchup, let me see what the DraftKings lineup has Stipe at. Stipe is $8,200 for your DraftKings pick, and DC is $8,000 for your DraftKings lineup salary cap. So whichever one you pick, score some points. The highest salary cap one, this one, is actually Sean O'Malley. But I think that's a pretty good chance for both of these guys, because we know this fight could potentially be finished early. We've seen DC do it. We've seen Stipe stop him later in the rounds. And both guys land a lot of significant strikes. We know DC gets a lot of takedowns. So those guys are probably going to be in a lot of people's lineup for points. Shit, man. This is a tough one to call. I really don't know. DC did a great job with the grappling in the first round and in some of the second, and then got away from it. Fell in love with the striking in that fight with Stipe, who is the better boxer, in my opinion. But I think Stipe figured out that if he just keeps attacking up top, he's going to have a little bit more difficulty with the shorter man. So he started digging into that body, and you see him really ripping into those liver shots, and DC was really feeling them. So again, I think it comes down to the approach from both guys. We're not sure how hard DC's training. He's a lot older. I know he's had some injuries. So we got to keep that in mind when you're making your picks. And also with Stipe, we know he had that significant eye injury from his last fight with Daniel Cormier. So I'm not exactly sure how much he's recovered. I know he's ready to fight. And he did the whole thing with the first responder, doing the quarantine, helping out. Kudos to Stipe for that. That was a remarkable and brave thing for him to do, to stick to his guns with his job and his duty to the people of Ohio. I love that about him. I really love both guys, man. I would hate to see either man lose. It'd be nice to see DC go out on top. It'd be nice to see Stipe show that he's still the kingpin and the baddest man on the planet. I don't know. Father Time is undefeated, and both these guys, it's not like both guys are the youngest. I'm not sure how much younger Stipe is, 37. Man, may the better man win. I'm excited for this one. I can't pick. I can't call it. Co-main event, we have Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera. Sean O'Malley, like I said, the highest on the DraftKings card, coming in at 9,200, taking on Marlon Vera, who used to be ranked, not ranked anymore in the division, who's 7,000, which I'm surprised, because he does get finishes whenever he does finish a fight. And I can see him, if he can get this fight to the ground, I think he puts O'Malley away. 1,000%. But can he get O'Malley to the ground with O'Malley's movement, his footwork? And it's a smaller cage. I'm not sure for UFC 252 if they're going to go with the bigger cage. I would hope that they stick with the smaller cage. If they do, that makes things interesting at heavyweight. That makes things interesting at this weight class for O'Malley, who uses a lot of footwork, and a guy like Vera, who needs to close the distance and isn't the best striker, but he's a great kicker. I think if Vera could get back to his kicking and get back to that dirty boxing that he did against Andre Ewald, this could be a very difficult fight. For anyone to think that Marlon Vera is a pushover fight and a gimme fight for Sean O'Malley is delusional. I think Vera is more tested. I think he's been in there with some of the best guys and beat some of the best guys. If you look at the resume, lost to Sung Yadong decision, but a lot of people thought he won, or that fight was a draw at worst. Andre Ewald finished him ground and pound, but beat him up on the feet in the third round. Nolan Hernandez, second round. Rene Cachoque, Frankie Sines, punches in round one. Kennedy Guido beat him up in round two. Burren body shots in round three. So he's on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fight before he lost to Song Yadong. But before that, he was ranked. He lost to Douglas Andrade's decision and John Lineker by decision. He beat Kelleher by round one armbar, beat Brad Pickett. So he's kind of up and down. But when he's fought the top of the division, he's had some difficulty. Now, we're going to have to find out, is O'Malley top of the division or not? He's ranked 14th, but by beating who? You know? And not saying the kid's not good. He's a special talent. But how good is Sean O'Malley? We're going to find out, because this is going to be his toughest test to date. Will it be the toughest opponent in the weight class? Hell no. That's the champ. Those are the guys ranked in the top five. But we're going to give we're going to get a good idea of where O'Malley really is in his career. And I could see Merab calling him out if he does get the job done. But again, you can't count out Marlon Vera. I would not be surprised. I think sometimes Chito gets in his own head. I think he was a little hesitant in that fight with Song Yadong. And I think that ultimately cost him the fight. I think the same thing when he fought John Lineker, that cost him the fight, Douglas Andrade. So I think if he goes out there with his head sharp, bulletproof, knowing that he's confident, got the skills to win, he just needs to get the fight to the ground one time. If he could do that, his grappling is that fucking good. If I fight Chito, I know the grappling on the ground is going to be a problem, and I'm going to have to play a game of more. Stall him out for a little bit, make him flustered to make him make the mistake for me so that I can get the power positions that I want. Because if I go too crazy, that could be a short night for me, and or running into more trouble with the guy like Chito who has long limbs for the weight class. He's a tall dude. He's like 5'9", I think, and he has a pretty long reach as well. Junior Dos Santos versus Jair Rozenstruik. This is going to be a fun fight. Rozenstruik coming off of a loss to Francis Ngannou. Junior Dos Santos, 36 years old, coming off a two-fight losing skid right now to Francis Ngannou and then Curtis Blaydes, both finishes. Before that, he was on a three-fight win streak. Rozenstruik, how old is he? 32. This is a good fight for both guys to try to get back in the win column in a big way. Can they make the division, not realize, but show the division that they're still a contender in this weight class. Rozenstruik comes in at $8,400 for his DraftKings salary, and JDS is at $7,800. I'm actually surprised. They think Dos Santos goes to the decision a lot or something, because that's a pretty good bang for your buck, because it seems like he gets finished or he finishes guys. Blagoy Ivanov, he went to decision. I can't see this fight going to decision. Three-round fight. We'll see. We'll see. Next matchup, John Dodson versus Merab Dvalishvili. Let's go. This is a big one. I am so pumped about this for Merab. John Dodson ranked 12th in division. Merab ranked 15th, finally getting his respect that is well-earned and deserved. He is a true grinder, true player in this division, and a true threat. He is the machine for a reason. He goes out there and he puts on a pace like no other. And I'm super excited to help him out and be a part of his training camp and his journey in the UFC. One hand washes the other. He's been helping me a ton. I've helped him a ton. And I think you've seen a lot of growth in between the two of us over our UFC careers. And I'm super excited for him to go out there and get it done once again over a tough guy with a big name. Kind of a one-trick pony. You know what you're going to get with John Dodson. You know what you're going to get with Merab. A ridiculous pace. John Dodson better have his running shoes ready, because Merab is coming. And he's coming for that ass. Let's see the betting odds for this. John Dodson, $7,500. And Merab, ooh, $8,700. So he's high on the DraftKings salary. Merab coming in at $8,700. And John Dodson coming in at, what did I just say he was? $7,500. Now, the one thing we talked about with this fight, Merab just can't run into Dodson's cross. That's his biggest weapon. It's no secret. He typically throws two straights or three straights, and he blitzes you in. He blitzes in when people step too close and get into his personal space, and then he just darts. Bop, 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 bop. And he fires those short little midget arms, and he claps guys. And it works. He catches guys. People kind of disrespect him. He caught Nathaniel Wood, came in a little bit too aggressive in that third round. Nathaniel was doing a phenomenal job up until that point. And that fight could have maybe gone a little bit longer, but I don't know if anything would have changed for Wood in that fight. But you can see how people get over anxious and they start to chase Dodson, and that ends up being the situation that gets them all caught up and they end up losing the fight because they get a little too overzealous. So hopefully this fight goes the right way. I believe it will. I think Morales pressure his pace. We worked on just taking your time and not going crazy, and I think that's going to be huge for Merab. Now, we're running out of space for this card. I actually ran out of camera space, so we're going to cut this one short. So we're gonna cut this one short. We ran out of camera space. Goddamn GoPro. I didn't bring my big camera, so it is what it is. But either way, man, there's a lot of fun fights on this card. We finally got to see Kutalaba versus Ankalaev, the rematch when he was pretending that he was rocked, and then the ref stepped in when he was still standing, and then he's just like, yo, bro, come on. So excited for that one. We got Jim Miller versus Vince Purcell. That should be a fun fight. Two older guys. Vince Purcell, tough veteran. He's 37 years old, and he's coming off a win over Roosevelt Roberts' decision. That was actually a good fight. I remember that one. Jim Miller, 32-14 record, 36 years old. Oh, he's only 36. I feel like he's been around forever. He beat Roosevelt Roberts, too. Who had the better win? We're going to find out. the common opponent. Ashley Yoder versus Salza. We have Herbert Burns versus Daniel Pineda. This is the return of Daniel Pineda from a very long time. When was he in the UFC? So no contest, PFL, no contest, Kai Bulayev, PFL, leg kicks, hooks, guillotine. I don't know whatever happened with that. Ray Trujillo, Fury FC. He went on a 1, 2, 3, 4 fight win streak. He went to Bellator. So his last fight in the UFC was against Robert Whiteford. He lost by decision. Before that, he lost to Diego Brandao by decision. He's a sick grappler. I got to grapple with him when I went down to, 4 Ounce MMA in Texas. That was a good time. I got to meet Mick Maynard. I didn't meet Mick. I found out Mick was down there, and he was training down there, and I met Mick like shortly after. And yeah, we just talked about my trip down there and my visit. And he's like, yeah, this is the place I started training and whatnot. So it was cool, man. So that's where he trains. I think he's still down there in Texas. And it was a fun experience. And I got to roll with Daniel. I think he's a very good grappler, very good wrestler. And I'm excited for this one. Herbert Burns is a good BJJ guy. His brother, obviously, the number one contender right now to fight Kamaru Usman. And I think Herbert Burns is looking sharp right now. So this is a tough return for Daniel Pineda for sure. Herbert Burns on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fight win streak. Finish over Dunham. Finish over Landwehr. Finish over Miner. Finish over Gomez. Finish over Norset. So big fight, man. This is a big fight for both guys. I think Burns wins this, and he asserts himself to upper echelon of that division at 145 for sure, no questions asked. So Pineda's got his hands full. Let's see if he can use his wrestling game to stifle the striking abilities, because Burns can strike. He showed some really good striking in his last two UFC performances, and this is going to be his third one to date. So looking forward to that one. Felice Herrig versus Jandy Roba. I didn't even know if Felice Herrig was still fighting, because I haven't seen her in a while. She is 35 years old. She lost her last two to Michelle Watterson decision and Carolina Kowalska-Kaswick by split decision. But before that, she won 4 in a row. Caitlin Curran, Alexa Grasso, Justin Kish, and Courtney Casey by split decision. So check those out. Going to be a good fight. Like I said, we got our guy Marab fighting. 2020, our team is just on fire. I got no real concern. And if you feel good about this fight card for Marab, hit that like button. I don't know how this YouTube algorithm stuff works, but I'm excited, man. It's gonna be a fun time. I might not be in the corner. I might still undecided about that, because I wanna, what would it call it? I wanna let Pumi, who's the same height as John Dodson, be the partner that he could work with, because with the quarantine, only the guys that are gonna be in your corner can be in the hotel. So I'm undecided on that, because if I am, I'm not sure if I'm in shape to give Marab the full amount of rounds. I mean, I could sack up and do it, but I just don't want to be lazy about it. I want to make sure he can lose the weight efficiently and still get the proper looks with a guy his size and that has shorter reach. My arms are much longer than Pumi's and a little much longer than Marab's as well. So if he can get Pumi to give him those looks, Pumi Nakuda, 1-0 pro, undefeated amateur fighter, I think that would be a much more beneficial thing. And I'm a team player, man. I don't need to be in the the spotlight. You know, obviously he trusts Pumi, and he's been training with him for a while now. So for him to go out there would be just like the last fight with Gustavo Lopez, who I actually trained with not too long ago while I was out here in Vegas in with Casey Halstegs. So I don't know. We got to figure that part out. I'm gonna talk to him hopefully today or tomorrow and see what we can do to make sure we're giving him the best opportunity to win. If he wants me for the grappling advice, great. But he's got Matt Serra there. The only things that I would help out differently would be the cage situations and the wrestling. That's really it. But for this one, he's got Ray. He knows what to do there. He's got Pumi to help him lose weight. He's got me to help him lose weight. So whichever way he decides to go, I'm excited. And I'm going to back him 110%. My house is supposed to close tomorrow. Ah, I'm excited. Let's fucking go. 2020, man. We just can't lose. Knock on wood. But as always, man, thank you guys for always tuning in. If you like my shit, subscribe to my shit or spin it. Back fist, baby. You ain't got to go bow, home, bow, but you got to get stepping.
Boop. And remember, we bring the noise later, guys. Because the people Peace. Want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.